Hi, welcome to Breakfast Conversations, the education-focused podcast where we enjoy slow-paced and deep conversation.
Dear listener, welcome to this second season of Breakfast Conversations. I want to start out with giving you a small update on what you can expect from this second season of the podcast. In the first season, I made 15 very experimental episodes where we have recorded over the Anchor app, Skype, FaceTime, face-to-face in Paul's kitchen, and been on tour, collaborated with other podcasters like Chris and Lee from Open Door Podcast, and yeah, in general made a mix of single-person interviews and event episodes with up to 8 guests, and also behind the scenes I have experimented a lot with different workflows, different microphones, and gear in general. So around New Year's Eve, I said to myself, now it's time to stop playing around and experimenting and to find a fixed format for Breakfast Conversations. So let's bring out the episode with the lovely MFRE from South Africa that I already had recorded and make some things around the bed show. But then it's time to draw a line in the sand. Then it's time to stop experimenting and time to give Breakfast Conversation a clear, fixed structure and maybe a new sound and a couple of new segments. But then that will be the mold, the fixed format that I will stick with for every single future episode. Then it's time to be consistent. That's not me. That's not the way I work, or at least it's not the way I enjoy to work. I enjoy to experiment, and I realize that. And this is my passion project, and I don't make any money by making this podcast, so then it should at least be full of passion and be fun. So it will be a continuous flow of prototypes and half-baked ideas and a continuous ongoing learning journey where I want to have the freedom to experiment, because that's the way I learn more about the podcast production and storytelling. And this is my podcast journey and my learning journey. So Breakfast Conversations, that will be my playground. And if you are listening to it, I will love you for being with me on this journey. And I will do my very best to reward you by finding thoughtful and inspiring guests. And I will not try to deliver consistency, but I'll try to surprise you again and again. And always feel free to give me feedback on what you think about the episodes and the podcast in general. But there are two things that are going to change with this new season. First of all, I started Breakfast Conversations because I wanted to give something back to the Apple Distinguished Educator community, a community that I have been a part of since 2015, and it has been an enjoyable, fun crowd to in good times, and a really unique, supportive, and absolutely invaluable community in more difficult times. So I had this deep felt wish to give something back to that community. Especially I wanted to make something for new ADEs to become a part of the community even faster. So the podcast has been my little contribution to help amplify some of the great stories that every Apple Distinguished Educator has. And teachers in general are silent heroes with great stories that rather put their own learners in the spotlight than themselves. And my mission is still to give a little bit of spotlight to some of those silent heroes that educate the next generation of problem solvers, engineers, artists, healthcare workers, poets, big dreamers, and crazy rebels that we need for our future. So the brave front runners in education who work with kids and young people in all kind of places on this planet. Teachers who work with a new generation that wants to create a better, happier life for themselves and hopefully for others as well. And educators, they shape our future often without fully realizing their own importance and often without much recognition. But educators can make dents in our universe, and they can do it by wiping a tear away from the cheek of a child or by supporting and believing in kids that everyone else have given up on, or by challenging the traditions in our field and experimenting with new approaches towards learning. This podcast is still dedicated to Apple Distinguished Educators of 2019. And from now on, for every educator on a journey with a mission to improve learning. So no matter if you are an Apple Distinguished Educator or a part of the Apple Teacher Program or any other EdTech community, or maybe you are a teacher on your own mission for how we can continue to push the frontiers in the field of learning. No matter what, if you are in education because you want to make a difference, then my work with this podcast is dedicated to you. So from now on, if you are on a journey in the field of education and learning, you risk that I reach out to you and invite you for a breakfast conversation. So in short, in the future, there will also be guests on this podcast that aren't Apple Distinguished Educators from 2019 necessarily. We will mix it up a little bit more, and I really look forward to do that. And the other thing that will change is that I want to tie the individual episodes better together so that we can have the opportunity to go deeper down and get different perspectives on the topics that we are going to explore together in this season. So in this season, I want to introduce a concept around podcast mini-series. That will be the experiment this year, where each Breakfast Conversation partner will add new layers and perspectives on a current topic. Future mini-series will probably be on topics like teaching sustainability in our fragile world, the potential of design thinking and challenge-based learning in education, change leadership, how do we actually create the change that we dream about, maybe also something about well-being and bullying at schools, and a lot of other different interesting topics. But now it's time to start the first episode in this first mini-series. So dear listeners, welcome to the city of Hong Kong. The small music snippet that you just heard was my little garage band recreation of the first seconds of Glory to Hong Kong, a powerful piece of music created by an unknown group of musicians from Hong Kong who support the protest movement. And you have probably also followed the news coverage of the protest and the current situation in Hong Kong. But right now, like in many cities in China, the schools are also closed in Hong Kong as well, because of the coronavirus or the COVID-19 virus. With this mini-series of podcasts from the beautiful city of Hong Kong, I don't want to spread fear about the COVID-19 virus or join the hyped and pumped media cycle about it. But the question that I want to dive into and explore together with you is, what happens when all schools get suspended in a city with 7.4 million people? Pupils, students, and teachers can't go to school. They have to stay at home. But the learning has to continue. The internet connection has from one day to the other replaced the classroom. It's online learning now on a huge, nearly unimaginable scale and without much time to prepare for that shift. So over the next episodes, we will hear from 5-6 teachers who live and teach in this new reality, and they will share their Hong Kong stories and their current experiences with us. I have a hypothesis about that extreme situations like the current one can accelerate innovation and lead to totally new insight and ideas. And that's what I want to explore with this mini-series. So the challenges are real and the situation is serious for the teachers and learners in all those cities where schools are suspended. But it is maybe also an opportunity for learning something new about learning and online learning. And the reality is that this won't be the last pandemic that will force schools to close down for weeks or months. In this hyper-connected world, we can all be in a similar situation at some point of time. So how do we prepare our learning institutions and ourselves for that scenario? That is what we are going to explore in this mini-series. We will now jump into a sound portal that will take us to Hong Kong. We are now in the sound portal. We are on the airplane and our destination is Hong Kong. Try to relax All the sounds that you will hear during this sound portal are recorded in Hong Kong. When we land, we will travel by train and then by bus so that we can arrive at our destination where we will meet our first educator from Hong Kong.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cebu Pacific welcomes you to Hong Kong International Airport. Local time is 11 minutes past 7 in the evening and the ground temperature is at 26 degrees Celsius. On behalf of the flight deck crew, Captain Carr and Captain Ilagan, and your cabin crew team, thank you for making Cebu Pacific your airline of choice.
Your attention please. Eating or drinking is not allowed in the main areas of stations or on trains.
Next station, Mongkok. Doors will open on the left.
Now we are in Hong Kong, and it's time for our first breakfast conversation with one of the many amazing teachers working and living here in this city. Our first breakfast conversation guest on this mini series from Hong Kong will be Tim Evans. Tim Evans is the Educational Technology Coordinator at Stanford American School here in Hong Kong, and he's actually our Apple Distinguished Educator from 2019. I have been connected with Tim for years on Twitter, where he builds international connections, and he is definitely one of those who always help other teachers. But this was actually my first real verbal conversation with Tim, and I really enjoyed it and looking forward to share it with you. And this conversation was recorded on the 10th of February, so it was shortly after the Chinese New Year holiday had ended, and it was in the first weeks of the school suspensions, and there were fewer COVID-19 cases at that point of time. Just to give you a little bit of context for this breakfast conversation, and we are jumping into my conversation with Tim Evans at a point where I've just asked him about the flags in his Twitter bio.
I do. So it's fairly simple, but I quite like to have it up there. It's basically, I was born in Wales. My family are Welsh. Mm. Now my new family, so to speak, my wife is Spanish. And I lived in Spain for 7 years. And now we've been 3 years in Hong Kong. So I just thought, I love myself an emoji.
So that's the places that you are especially attached to.
Yeah, definitely.
But with all those countries that you feel connected to, how is your ideal breakfast in the weekends then? What kind of traditions do you land on?
I was worried, Jakob, you're going to ask me to choose one. And I thought, oh, I was going to end the call because I don't want to choose one. I thought you were going to ask me to choose which country. Breakfast, so I'm not really a massive breakfast person. I'm more like a mid-morning breakfast. Okay. So I'll wake up in the morning. I'll just have a coffee. Then I'll go through the same routine for a couple of hours, you know, troubleshooting anything, emailing things. And then I like to say it's 9 a.m., but it's normally about 10, half past 10. Then I'll sit down. I love a Spanish tostada, pan con tomate. Yeah. It's just so simple. kind of know this isn't a food podcast, but it comes down to just the simple ingredients: good bread, good tomatoes, good olive oil, good orange juice, and a lovely coffee. Simple man.
Yeah. But how has your experience been the last couple of weeks in Hong Kong?
It's moved very fast. Don't put this the wrong way. I've quite enjoyed the idea of the challenge of actually getting everybody up and running. So those who don't know, all the schools in Hong Kong are currently closed till the beginning of March, and that will potentially be extended as well. But schools continuing as close to normal as possible. So online learning is up and running. In my role, so I'm education technology coordinator there. So myself and a team of us are busy getting everybody up and running. And it's actually quite exciting. It's a busy few weeks, but I'm sure we'll come out of it in a better place.
Yeah, and I would definitely like to dive deep into that soon. But can you please tell us a little bit more about your school?
Yeah, so I'm teaching at a school called Stanford American School. It's a school that opened just under three years ago. So I moved to Hong Kong as it was part of a new startup, which I highly recommend anyone gets the opportunity to do that. It's almost a once in a career thing to do, but it's absolutely an amazing experience. The idea of building a community, starting a new culture, a school, or something—it's something that I appreciate very highly.
Yeah, it's sometimes easier to create culture from the beginning than trying to transform existing.
That's very true. Yeah, I believe it's easier to create culture than to change culture. Yeah. But I mean, great leadership at school. We involved everyone in the community: parents, students, teachers. And everybody had a say in that, took ownership of it. And so, yes, we're up to about 750 students now. We'll grow to about 1,200. Okay. We're part of a wider group, so Cognita Schools, who have 70-plus schools globally, which has helped us because we've been able to reach out to colleagues in other schools for support as well. In the region, there's about 12 schools, I think, in Asia, so we've reached out to them as well. They've been great supporting us. And it's one of them, we can borrow things from different schools, and again, we can mould things that suit us. So it's been a great opportunity. And there, I touched on it right at the beginning there, so there I'm educational technology coordinator.
Yeah, as you said before, right now everything is online learning.
Yep, everything, 100%.
And how long time have you had to prepare that? Because I think, of course, with some of the other coincidences before with the bird flu and so on, you know that this risk, but have you actually had time to prepare?
Not prepare so much. I mean, we're lucky that we have a really well-skilled teaching staff. So in that sense of things, there wasn't too much preparation. The idea of main preparation was setting expectations, getting everyone on the same page. It caught us a little bit off guard in the sense that we just had a Chinese New Year break, which was a week off. And the schools were closed during that break. So there's some challenges there. We hadn't met in teams. Some students had left their devices at home, where they'd left school earlier and things like that. So there were some challenges to iron out there. First couple of days were so chaotic in a good way. And this week now we've just started. It's the start of the second week here now, and I feel we're up and running. We've had a good head start on it, just because we've got tech savvy staff.
Yeah, and the platforms that you use every day, is it still the same that you can use now for the online learning?
Yeah, it is. So, So hardware iPads. So we're iPad schools in that sense. Elementary school's iPad, middle school and high school is MacBook. We've actually grade 6 on iPad Pros. This is the first year trying it out, and it's been a great success with the pencil and the keyboard. Well, as you can imagine, if you put that in the hands of a kid, they can pretty much do anything on those devices. Yeah. But we're using software. We've had a little of, you're an ADE too, but we've had a little of issues with schoolwork and the collaboration side of things. So I really tried my best to try and integrate it, but it just didn't seem to work. The standalone apps are key. Now I love Pages and everything, but more for collaboration, we're still on, we're with Google.
Yeah.
And it fits in with everything. Even now, so we're using Google Hangouts. It's not Google Hangouts, sorry, Google Meet. Where we're connecting things, Google Drive. It's just built so much easier for collaboration at the moment.
Yeah, I think there is some challenges still if there are multiple users in the same document at the same time, yeah. And so on. That's
awesome. I mean, I'm going to shout out to our staff because we're all Apple teachers. I pushed that out to teachers. I was a little bit worried about asking teachers to do it. Nothing at all. They all jumped on it, did the qualification. And then we've got the majority of our teachers at Google Level 1 as well, which is always the qualification I recommend if a teacher comes to me to Google Level 1, because it's a strong, strong basis for teaching. So that's definitely helped us out. And it wasn't planned, it maybe should have, but it's fallen into places. And there's a couple of teachers per grade who I call the digital pioneers who are leading that then. So there's different levels of support as we go through the school.
So right now, the teams, they have to both develop new content, I imagine, for the online learning and keep the contact with the students. And
I mean, the curriculum's the same, the content's pretty much the same. Okay. A lot of the time, the delivery is very similar because a lot of our teachers sometimes follow a flipped learning model. Okay. So where it would have been a presentation on a Google slide, now it's the slides pushed out and the student looks at it. So we have a model where in the morning at 8 a.m. Work's pushed out, and then the school schedule continues then. So if a teacher has math at 10 a.m., that math teacher is online, usually on a Google Meet, where students drop in and then they can discuss things, ask questions. It's a bit of a challenge because the students have moved around, so they're different time zones as well. A lot of them have left Hong Kong.
Oh, okay.
So that's a challenge.
So it's really international right now.
It is. We're only in week two and we're kind of pulling our hair out and everything, but I genuinely think it's a great experience for us. And I just know that our teachers and our whole team in general, we're going to be better educators after this. I mean, I'm worried if I'm going to have a job because all the teachers are going to be so tech confident and they're not going to want me. But it's great. I mean, if we can do all this from distance, when we do get back into a classroom environment.
Yeah, I think that's highly interesting. And also to hear that you have this huge advantage that both in the pedagogy that they have worked with flipped learning previously, that they have the technical gear, where I think schools that have a more traditional approach and more traditional equipment, maybe they must really be struggling right now to keep the connection with their students.
I can't imagine. But what we've also done is try to build a culture with technology. That idea of exploring tools. I always tell students that 99% of the tools that we use now, I never used in my education all the way up to university. It's all new technology in the last 2 or 3 years. So we've had to explore it. And we have to evolve with it. A lot of the tools we do use, the learning process, so we involve the students. Just picking a lot of AR stuff, VR stuff now. Sometimes the first couple of times a teacher's looked at technology will be with the students. Yeah. And they share that journey with them. And I think the students do react positively to that.
And you have a culture where the teachers feel safe with jumping into a new technology together alongside the students.
Definitely. And the students acquire those skills as well, and that mindset as well, which stands them in good stead.
And that's amazing. And you also said that you expect them to come back as also the teachers even better equipped. So this crisis or shift change in things.
Yeah, And we've got teachers. I mean, they're using Flipgrid. They're using, a lot of teachers are using it before, but now the majority of teachers are using it, even if it's just a morning check-in. Or we had World Read Aloud Day last week. They were using that. A lot of them now, they're getting students just doing some portfolios on Google Sites. We normally introduce Google Sites at grade 5, or we've got grade 3 looking at it now this week. Simply because it's kind of forced our hand and turning it into an advantage, an opportunity.
Yeah, and it will be really interesting to see how it impacts teaching in a year from now, or when you are back, the teachers are back in the classroom and so on.
It's teachers and students as well. I think it's a great opportunity. I'm hoping it ends sooner rather than later, obviously. But if this goes to the middle of March, potentially Easter. Yeah. We have to turn it into an advantage.
Yeah, and I think some students maybe also discover that they can take ownership over their own learning and drive it.
I agree there. But one thing's worth commenting on, that we have had some feedback from all stakeholders, from parents, students as well, is the power of face-to-face contact. It's we still need it. Everyone's asked that question, oh, what's going to happen with education in the future? Is it all going to go online? But that students still, they just love, sometimes we have teachers jump on Google Meet. Sorry, I'm getting these mixed up this week. Google Meet. Yeah. And the kids just want to see the teachers, and they want to see each other. So there is still that need for some sort of human interaction. So they're not completely isolated.
Yeah, I think my experience, I think it's 7 years ago or something like that I made some online learning as well, parallel to classroom. And my experience was, it was so hard to, or for me as a teacher at least, it was hard to teach those students that were 100% online and that I have never met. So sometimes I have been teaching people for a year or two, and then the first time I saw them were to the exam, the final exam, and that was much harder than those where I have knew them as students and individuals, and then moving it online, that was easier than the personal connections there.
It is that power of relationships. We always do it first couple of weeks of the school year. We hold back the iPads. We want students getting to know each other first, teachers getting to know them. Where if you haven't got that initially, it's definitely more challenging.
But I also can imagine having the tools. You talked about Flipgrid and Google Meet, Hangouts, and so on. Mm. I thought, if I just had those tools 8 years ago.
Oh, I know. It's also worth noting, a lot of the tools we use, apart from the hardware, are free tools. I mean, it's like once you got a Chromebook or an iPad, all that, Flipgrid's free, Google's free. We use Seesaw, which is paid, I know, but then Book Creator has free apps. I think it's, I could be wrong, something like 5 free books you can create, let alone your Keynote, your Pages. So there's a lot of that free software about as well that we do try and use.
And has there been any other responses from the parents? Because that must also be challenging sometimes for them now.
It's been the majority of it, very positive. There's been different things that sometimes they feel is too much work, which is a good thing in a way, in the sense that you don't want parents feeding back that there's not enough work. That elephant in the room, device time, screen time, had some chats with parents about it. That is hard enough in a classroom environment, but when it's online learning. So what we're actually exploring is we're going to do a couple of device-free days. So the work that's going to be pushed out the day before, we'll set them up and it's no device. So it'll be, you need to read this, there's a write a story, our PE team, our physical education team are going to set them up with some things to do. So there'll be one day they're device-free. So we're going to see, we haven't done that yet because we're done day 6.
Yeah.
So maybe after like day 14, 15, we'll have a look at exploring that then. But I mean, device time is always going to be there. I mean, it's always a challenge. We always look at what are you doing with the device, at the actual quality of the screen time you're using. Is it productive? Is it creative? Or is it just you just playing a game? So it's that conversation is never going to go away.
No, but I think also for the parents, sometimes it must be interesting to, or it gives them the opportunity to be much closer to what kind of schoolwork that kids actually are doing. And knowing for myself, being busy and having kids go to school, but actually knowing what they are doing, I think that must be so interesting when they suddenly are working from home. And
we had a parent say that they didn't know you could do a Google Meet. So she said, she's going to start using it with family now. She wants to quickly get hold of family. It's Google Hangouts. She didn't know Google, that Hangouts had its own little chat, like almost WhatsApp. So the parents are learning. It's new to them, so there's no precedent to this. We haven't got any teachers that I know of who were involved during SARS, which was 2003. So I think as everybody, this is completely new to them. And 2003, let me check my maths. I don't think there were many parents of students who were parents back then either.
So that, it must be really interesting also things are more back to the normal schedule to evaluate this time period and see.
It will. It's gone so fast already. So this week's gone so fast already. So it will be definitely time to evaluate and actually see. As a community of teachers as well, as a team, it's brought us closer. It's funny that we're not seeing each other, but we're actually in contact with each other more, because there needs to be a little bit more planning. There needs to be a little bit more communication about what's been done, when it's been done, and things. So it's funny that the distance is bringing us closer as well.
Yeah, and it could be interesting. You touched also on it that maybe that situations like this can maybe open up for innovation and new ideas on how we do things in the classroom, or new perspectives on learning and so on can maybe come to the surface because of
you have to think outside the box. I mean, we're the majority of our teachers may say they're outside of their comfort zone, which I'm sure they are, but it's how we're having to work as a team with this one, to look at things and try things and be open to, like, we're going to give this a go today. If it doesn't work, fine, we'll try something else tomorrow. But we tried, and we do have that mentality. So I'm proud of everyone when it comes to the tech use.
Yeah, it must really be interesting times right now for that, and gathering all those kind of experiences afterwards and learning
from I'm enjoying it. I won't deny it at all. I'm actually enjoying the whole experience.
I saw also that you were sharing some of the online learning on Twitter, where you sit with the Memoji lion face, and
yeah,
I can see that there's room for humor also in this situation.
That came about because I was just looking at the students' daily routine now. I could easily get tedious, especially the struggle is the motivation side of things. And I've been able to not seeing a student, you can't get a read on the reaction if they're engaged. So we're really looking at mixing it up. So where you normally greet them saying, hello, how are you? Or just do a different emoji every day, maybe, or do I'm looking, just maybe put a green screen. So I was exploring actually yesterday, so just putting a green screen behind you and mixing it up with a background. You're doing a math lesson, change the background, you're doing something, or maybe I get the students to guess what city you're in, kind of thing, just so it's just different. It adds a little bit of excitement because that's the challenge, is the motivation and the engaging, getting engagement on students when they're at home alone. I know myself, I'd spent a day yesterday, last week on my own, and even for me it's a struggle. Do you mean when you're on your own, we need that that human interaction as well.
But I also think it's so interesting that there's a lot of research right now and projects around playfulness and learning, but also having that playful approach to online learning. I think that's an interesting aspect to see how can we actually create that engagement and And that online learning, of course, also can be a lot of fun. And
I mean, most of you go into most classrooms around the world, going to be some sort of group work during what's A's period, whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something. So that's where what we're trying to look at. Google Docs is great for live collaboration, and then you've also got their Meet tools and things like that where they can actually try and connect.
Yeah. I would like to hear if there was something that you have learned from Hong Kong or those different schools that you now have worked in, or maybe especially the new school you role. Is there something that you would like to take back if you one day would go back to teaching in Europe? Is there something a Hong Kong experience that we can learn from?
Apart from the bubble tea and the iced tea they have, which I don't think I can bring back to the classroom environment in West Wales, it would be...
I've heard about it, and it's now coming as an emoji as well. I haven't tried that.
Yeah, I saw that. I suppose it's one of the new emojis. Jakob, if I could ship it to you, I'll ship you one for your breakfast. No, but in all seriousness, it would probably be the idea of having an open mind when it comes to not just technology, just in the classroom, exploring things, and involve students in the whole learning process, the dialogue behind why we're using technology, how we can use it for good. I think even more so as they're becoming true digital citizens, where we're the generation where we're crossing over into it. They're born into it. So that idea of exploring technologies and turning it into a tool that supports us daily, I think that's the main takeaway.
You often are tweeting about the latest trends in technology, and I have seen a lot of AR and virtual reality stuff on your feed as well as on. What kind of trends or new technologies do you think will impact learning and education over the next 4 or 5 years?
4 or 5 years. I can't imagine how things are going to advance even more. But I think now it's turning into it's the idea of creation and using the tools. So VR's been around, AR's around. But now how can we actually use it? Students can use it to demonstrate learning and things like that, where we always have this phrase in the UK, it's like death by PowerPoint. Well, now students can move away from that and they can use augmented reality to show learning, to express feelings and things like that. So it's the idea of creation, basically.
Yeah.
Virtual reality, you go on a field trip, you've got a 360 camera, you could grab some footage to bring it back to the classroom to edit it, mix it up, share it then. So I think that's the main thing now, is what we're actually doing with existing technology.
Yeah.
So I do believe there's an emphasis on future technologies, where we're going. But I think we're still not finished with what we've got. And let's take advantage of the tools that we've got first.
So the interesting shift is not necessarily the technology, but our mindset about
that's
teaching.
It, man. It's the use. It's the use of it that's changing. I mean, the augmented reality, you've seen James Bond films a few decades ago. It was around, it was existing, but now it's in our hands on a daily basis. Yeah. We've got it on phones, so now it's how that's what's changing. It's to how we're using it.
And the kids can actually be creative with those technologies. They're not
expensive, man,
they are approachable and often
they've got more imagination, they're more creative than us as well. So it's again that idea of exploring it. If you don't know how to use Reality Composer on the iPad, that's no problem. Share it with the students and let them teach us, let them show us how to use it as well, and they enjoy that.
How about Twitter? Are they?
Yeah, so we've got a big Twitter there. Actually, I just thank you, Jakob. I'm going to shout out. We got a hashtag StanfordHK. It's buzzing at the moment with what people are doing. So get following that. I've got a list as well. So I've got a Twitter list there of all our teachers. Follow them.
Okay.
They follow back. Yeah. I encourage that. So we've got loads of teachers. We've got about 50, 60 teachers who are active on Twitter. And then we encourage, we have Twitter challenges in the school just to get people using it and celebrating what they're doing in the classroom, but also a way of getting ideas as well.
Thank you very much for your time, Tim.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Jakob. All the best and everything. Keep doing what you're doing. I follow the podcast. Thank you for setting it up. And I look forward to listening to future episodes.
So this was my conversation with Tim Evans. I really hope that you enjoyed it. I am aware that the sound quality wasn't perfect during the interview. We were recording with the Zoom app, and I don't know why, but we had troubles getting a good quality connection that day. But I really enjoyed this conversation, and I really hope that you will consider following Tim Evans on Twitter if you're not already are following him, and as well Stanford American School in Hong Kong. And I hope that you are also looking forward to the next episodes, because this is the first episode in a new season, but also the first episode in a mini series of episodes. And I have already recorded a number of other interviews with amazing and really interesting teachers from Hong Kong. So the next couple of episodes will all be from Hong Kong. And I promise you, there is some really interesting stuff to look forward to. And if you like this episode, please share it. And if you have any feedback, please reach out to me. On Twitter, I am Jakob Espen. It's J-A-K-O-B-E-S-B-E-N. And I would love to hear your feedback and your thoughts on this episode. Feedback is what helps me improve my podcast game, so never hesitate by giving feedback. That's how I can grow and how I can learn more about podcasting. Now I will soon try to be quiet for a couple of minutes, and then you will hear a recording recorded in Kowloon Park in Hong Kong, a big green park where a lot of Hong Kongers normally come to make chai tea and other sports. And while you are imaginary walking in that park, I would like you to go with me on a journey where we explore that scenario and think about what would we do, what would you do if you were in a similar scenario. What if we should, from one day to the other, stop teaching in our classroom and had to keep the connection with our learners over the internet instead of the classroom? How would we actually be prepared for that scenario? Do we have the infrastructure to it? Are the platforms there? What ideas do we have to keep connected with our children and our learners in a scenario like that? And are our kids ready for it? And how could we make it fun and engaging? And if we could actually make it really fun experience over a month's time, could we then take some of that back into the classroom afterwards? But now I'll shut up and try to let you reflect on that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Breakfast Conversations, the education podcast where we sit down one-to-one with amazing educators from around the world. If you enjoyed it, share it.